COVID-19. Oh, we need a vaccine at this moment. It means everything. Please wear your mask and stay 6 feet back. Total shutdown. COVID-19.
Hello, once again, everyone. Welcome to another edition of Two Middle-Aged Men in Cleveland, episode number niner. Ted, we made it to nine.
I can't believe it. They told us there were a lot of things that shouldn't be done, and we've done them, so we went ahead and did this too.
That's what we were supposed to do. Yes. Right. Great week. We started a Facebook page for our Two Middle-Aged Men in Cleveland show.
And started a Twitter account too.
We've had over 160 people that have liked our page. We really appreciate that. Thank you to all. And once again, all those folks will be receiving checks in the mail very soon. Thank you.
Yes. Our social media staff, Louie and the guys, doing a tremendous job.
And Louise does a great job as our marketing director. We appreciate that.
Yes. It's all coming together here at Two Middle-Aged Men in Cleveland. There's no question about it.
Once again, thanks to everyone that's listened, and we look forward to entertaining you again once again with this show. How was your week?
My week was good. We celebrated my wife's birthday this week. So we had I got her flowers on Friday, and then I went to Baskin-Robbins and picked up some of their individual ice cream cakes so the boys could enjoy those as well, and they were very excited about that. I had them come out to the car. They walked in with me. We all sang, so it was a good time. And then on Sunday, we went to my in-laws, and we had a cookout for her birthday. Enjoyed some adult beverages, and I had a good time.
You don't bring me flowers anymore, Ted.
That was a while ago. We won't talk about that. Well, let me guess. This week, you played golf.
Of all the guesses you can give, that was one of them, and that is correct. Yes, played some golf. Had the opportunity to spend some time with my kids again for the weekend, Friday through Sunday, and just played some different games and ran around outside, did a little bit of a cookout ourselves and all that. So just some very good times with them. Walk the dog, take some long walks and all that. But we're getting to a point now, it's like they look at me sometimes like, hey, we've done that a couple times. Hey, got anything else? Got any other places we can go to? And I'm just not at a point I want to necessarily take them all over and all that stuff and deal with the mask and all that. So we just kind of stay home, and we still had a very nice time. It was great.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, coming up on the show this week, Ken, we're going to talk to Fox 8's John Telich, a legend in the Cleveland sports scene. We'll talk to him. We're going to have the conclusion of our game, True Lies. We're going to find out which the lie was and which the truth was. We will also debut a segment that we've been doing before, but we've got a new name for it, Klopp's Clips.
Oh,
Klopp's Clips. Bring it back. We'll explain when we get there. And we will tell you what happened this week in Cleveland history.
Well, Ted, many people gave guesses last week on which one of the statements that I made in True Lies
was a lie. Yeah.
So I'm going to go over those once again.
I'd love that.
Let you know which one was the fallacy.
Okay.
So the first one, I once slept in a parked car in my garage overnight. I met and shook hands with Penn State coach Joe Paterno. I drank a beer with NFL Hall of Famer Steve Young.
Yep.
I once met the rapper Flo Rida at the Miami airport before a plane ride. And the last one, Rick Majerus, the former men's basketball coach at the University of Utah, I once got him a cheeseburger.
Now, I remember which my guess was. So I'll tell you what my guess was, and you tell us what you heard from other folks as far as their guesses. My guess was that you did not meet Flo Rida before an airplane flight.
Ted, I must tell you, that is a very popular choice.
Okay.
I also will say that is the correct answer.
Yes.
That is false. Yes. Well done. Yes. I have never met Flo Rida, nor have I seen him at the Miami airport, but I do know a Dworznik that did.
Oh.
His name is Tony Dworznik, my brother. He met him at the airport.
So, all right.
Along with his wife. Very quickly on these, I'm not exactly proud of one of them. I did sleep in a parked car in my garage overnight. Uh-huh. That's a long story. I was locked out. Not my fault, nor was it the person's fault who locked me out. I was locked out. Couldn't get in, and it was a long night in the car. There we go. I did meet and shake hands with Joe Paterno. That was back in my senior year of high school. He came down to talk to a gentleman by the name of Mike Buzzin, who was a very good defensive lineman for St. Ignatius and was a Division I player of the year and got a full ride to Penn State. And he was just talking to Coach Kyle, and I walked in the office to pick up a track schedule, and there was Joe Paterno, and he actually stood up and shook my hand, and I said, that's what I did. Yep. No, how you doing or anything. Nice to meet you. I just kind of said nothing. So
yep.
I did drink a beer with Hall of Famer Steve Young. That was at the College Football Hall of Fame.
What was he like?
He was a very nice man. Different. Very quiet. I was there because Fred Martinelli got inducted to the College Football Hall of Fame. So that was back in 2001, I believe, if I'm not
for
mistaken.
Those who don't know who Fred Martinelli is, let's tell them. Go ahead.
Longtime football coach at Ashland University, coached for over 30 years.
The winningest coach in Division II history, am I right?
That is correct. Was athletic director, just a very nice man, still involved with the university, comes to games and all that stuff. So I had the honor of driving all of 10 of his friends from Ashland to South Bend, Indiana, and at a reception, I had the opportunity to stand with Steve Young, and he invited me over to drink a beer with him and all that, and just a very nice man. The final one is true. I did purchase a cheeseburger for Rick Majerus before a practice. He was standing there. I was working in the NCAA tournament. I think this was in 1999. It was at the CSU Convocation Center, and my job was to get coaches to the podium so they could speak to the media. So I was just there for practice, brought a coach back. I can't remember who it was. And he's standing there. He's, hey, how you doing? I said, good. And he looked at me. He goes, it'd be really great if you can get me a cheeseburger. Yep, here I go. I'm 22 years old and I'll get you a cheeseburger.
You
I got him
cheeseburger,
a cheeseburger, yeah. Shook my hand and said, thank you very much. And I watched him eat that cheeseburger in about 30 seconds.
Of all the things you expected Rick Majerus to ask you to do, I'm guessing that wasn't high on the list.
No. When I woke up that morning, I said, what am I going to do today? Buy a cheeseburger for Rick Majerus.
Rick Majerus. Yeah. Interesting.
So, all right. That's my stories.
That is a lot of fake news back there. That's a lot.
All right. Now we have the fake news segment where I'm going to read you three headlines. Two of these I found published somewhere on the internet or in print. And one of them, I took great time and effort this week to create on my own.
Thanks for taking the time, Ted.
Yeah, absolutely. Of all the things I spent my time this week doing, this was one of them. So I am going to read these three things, and you're going to give me your guess as to which you think is the fake news.
Okay.
Headline number one. Flatulence saves man from kidnappers. A Los Angeles man was pulled into a van by a group of masked kidnappers, apparently looking for a diamond carrier. The man they grabbed had just eaten some burritos, had bad gas, and that caused them to stop. And that allowed police to arrest them. Headline number one.
Okay.
Headline number two. David Prowse uses Darth Vader mask to protect from COVID-19. The Star Wars star who is behind the mask for most of Darth Vader's time on the big screen has been seen out and about near his home in southern London wearing the iconic headpiece. When asked about his choice of masks, he said, quote, why not? I have it. It seems to work. I might as well get some use out of it.
Okay.
Headline number two. Here's headline number three. Tesla social distancing unit revealed. Elon Musk's latest invention appears to be a solar-powered helmet. The TSDU, Tesla social distancing unit, sounds a powerful, loud, attention-getting horn if anyone breaches the helmet wearer's six-foot perimeter.
Warning. What? Warning. Back away, please.
6 feet, 6 feet, 6 feet.
Wow.
I'm not touching you. I'm not touching you. I'm close, but I'm not touching you. So the headlines, one more time. Number one, flatulence saves man from kidnappers. Number two, David Prowse uses Darth Vader mask to protect from COVID-19. And headline number three, Tesla social distancing unit revealed. Ken, your thoughts?
I'm going to say I definitely know that the Tesla social distancing unit, I believe that's legit.
Okay.
I'm going to have to say that the David Prowse, that, I mean, unless you're really rewriting that, that seems pretty legit to me. I always think flatulence is, no pun intended, overblown.
Well, so, let me tell you, the key to any good segment is putting the word flatulence in the
segment.
That's
true. So my final answer will be, I think the made-up story is flatulence saves man from kidnappers.
Flatulence saves man from kidnappers. Let us see. Incorrect. That is a published story. The one that I took the time and effort and emitted some brain power to come up with.
Oh, my.
David Prowse uses Darth Vader mask to protect from COVID-19.
I really think you should, you have a new calling. You should write fake news.
Is that, you think there's some money in that?
I don't know, but I read this story and I believe the whole thing. I'm like, wow, this seems pretty legit. The guy's got the mask and all that. Well done, Ted. Got me again. I'm 0 for 2. 0 for 2.
Have you heard about Anchor? I'm not talking about the one for a boat. This is the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. There are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcast, and many more. You can make money for your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
Let's talk now with John Telich. John is a native Clevelander. He's been doing sports at Fox 8 for 40 years, which I think is amazing. I didn't know that child labor laws allowed you to start when you were 10 years old, but apparently
God bless you. God bless you, Teddy.
Yeah. From Euclid High School, 11-time Emmy winner and inducted into the Cleveland Broadcasters Hall of Fame back in 2007. So, John, thanks for your time. First off, Ken and I talked a little bit about it last week, being graduates of what is now Ashland University.
Yes.
When you were there, it was Ashland College, but you had the same professor who was in charge of the television department, Larry Heiner, who passed away a couple of weeks ago. Have any story or can you talk about his influence on your career? Any thoughts on Larry?
Well, my overriding image of Larry is, and it's probably the same as you guys, him wiping his brow, him fretting over small details of some production that we had in the works. And I just love the guy, absolutely love, because he had so much passion. And if you look at his obit and realize the breadth of knowledge he had on so many different subjects and the abilities he had as a musician, as a broadcaster, as a manager, quite an accomplished guy and loved by all. And so there would be many an occasion where over the years when I would just say, I'm driving through, you know, I'm driving down to Columbus to see my brother, whatever. And got time for breakfast or something like that. And he would always, if he was in town, he would make time. And I remember going to Ashland once to do a story on one of the football players there. And sure enough, Larry came over to the new, you know, football stadium, and we did our interviews, and then we were able to hang out. And I just absolutely loved the guy. But he was that way with me, and he was that way with you guys. He was that way with hundreds and hundreds of people over the years. And I just thought he was the essence of a small liberal arts college that really gave you a chance to see what it's like in the world. And he was so practical. His advice was very practical because, as you recall, we were doing a lot of stuff when we were in school. A lot of the schools now, some are more theoretical in their motives or their ways of teaching. And everything that we were able to take into the broadcast community, we did at Ashland College. And a lot of that was through his expertise. And of course, Jay and Mr. Lighty, it was just a wonderful department. And the esprit de corps and, you know, people, we would do things with Larry and Kathy, you know, that were over and above stuff that you would do with a normal quote unquote professor and his family. It just went, it was family. He was family to us. And so heavy heart that he passed, but he'll always have a huge spot in my heart because he was just a wonderful man. Wonderful guy.
No doubt, John. Thank you for those words. And obviously for your 40 years of being in broadcasting, getting a start at Ashland, Ohio, you usually don't hear anything like that. When you were in Ashland, did you have the opportunity to work at a station down there or anything like that before you got to Buffalo?
I did, Kenny. I actually, when I was at Ashland, my second year, my sophomore year, Marty Larson, who was a class in front of me and went on to own WNCO in Ashland and had a long career as management slash owner in the business, he helped me get my first radio job over in Galleon, WGLX in Galleon, Ohio. And so that was, I was a professional at 19. So, and then he helped me get in the door over at WNCO. So I was a quote unquote professional. I was working a lot of hours, weird shifts, you know, riding the board for Reds games that were on WNCO, or I was a country DJ for the last 2 years of my college quote unquote career at WNCO FM, and I was known as Country JT, and it was great. It was absolutely a fantastic time. And so when you couple that with all the experience that I got being on the air the last 2 years of college, I was on the air as the sports guy every night doing the sports. I was involved in some talk shows. I did stuff with Coach Martinelli with the football team, and just got a ton of experience. But even after all of that experience at Ashland, I really wasn't quote unquote ready to be in the business. I still needed to get that job. And that's where, you know, I got a job in South Dakota in 1976. And that was really my first TV job. And you know, it went from there. But college was a blur. Between that, I was in a frat. You know, I was trying to date my now bride. A lot of things were going on. But, you know, it was just a wonderful atmosphere being down in Ashland. Really was.
I'll tell really you, the thing that strikes me is you mentioned all these folks from Ashland, Mr. Lighty and Jay and Dr. Martinelli. We were there a few years apart. All those people were still there. So I think it speaks to when you talk about family, you know, it really was. It stayed that way. There's a lot of longevity there. Now, I've seen some of your posts and such on LinkedIn and things like that. You're now taking the baton for Larry and Jay to some extent, and you're mentoring young sportscasters. Am I right on that?
I'm loving it too. And I'll tell you what, when I was younger, there just wasn't a way for me unless I took it upon myself to go through the layers to get to the Gibbs Shanleys of the world or whomever to become mentored, if you will, by them. And so now with the social media, I think this is a great plus of social media. And social media being, you know, LinkedIn, for the most part, LinkedIn is incredibly positive. It's not like some of the other social medias like, you know, Twitter and or, you know, Facebook, where it can be on the negative side. Oh, so yeah. I remember putting a post out there, guys, just saying, all right, I've been in the business a billion years. I've got all this experience. When I started, I was literally shooting film, processing film, editing film. I was doing all of that stuff. And then now here we are 40 some years later, and I've got a cell phone on a stand on my kitchen table, and I'm live on the air on a TV station. And it's like, are you kidding me? And I joked, I said, this is almost like Al Franken with the satellite dish on his head in an episode of Saturday Night Live, just making a joke like doing being a live reporter somewhere. But that's how the business has evolved. So I just said, anyone, you know, if I had the opportunity to speak with someone with a lot of experience when I was getting out, I certainly would have relished the opportunity. So I'm here, you know where to find me. And young people have reached out, and I've had a great chance to just kind of keep up correspondence with sportscasters or young broadcasters all over the country. So it's been really kind of cool just to have them check in every so often. Hey, I just got a job. We're moving to Wichita, or I'm going to start doing sports and news in this market. So that's kind of cool. And that's what I really enjoy, because I do have a lot of experience, and I've tried to stay on top of the trends in the business. I was on Twitter before anybody else up here in Cleveland was doing Twitter back when it first started. Same thing for some of the other social media. So incorporate it, stay as close to the times as possible, and just enjoy the young people that you can come in contact, because they really do kind of energize you.
Oh, absolutely, John. I can only imagine they just appreciate the experience and, you know, and everything that you bring to them. Obviously now with the times that we're in, obviously with COVID affecting your job, I know you've had the opportunity, I've seen your coverage, you've been working from home, as you mentioned before. I guess another question, not to speak on COVID, but just as basically the industry, how has local TV sports changed over the years from what you've seen?
Well, it really has changed a lot, Ken. In the early days, I mean, you know, there were very few options. You had three stations back when I started, and so that's where people got their sports news. And then, of course, the newspaper slash the print side of things was so dominant. And so we would always lean on our brethren and sisters that were in the print media, whom I all respected for all these years. And that was what you learned over the years, just to, you know, that was your pool of information that you could work with. And then now, as there has become more and more areas where people get their news, I think on a daily basis, especially because of all the social medias out there, and we joke about someone in mom's basement, you know, breaking a story and that type of stuff. You have to be on your toes all the time just to check out stories that you know in your heart of hearts are probably clickbait. You know, most likely clickbait, but you still check them out before you give them any kind of light. And so in the quote unquote olden days, you would vet everything before you even gave that story one lick of mention on TV. And nowadays it's out there, you know, and someone is in the process of breaking a story and they'll send out a little bit of a tidbit about what they're working on. And so you're aware of all of that stuff. It's more frequent. You come in contact with a lot of people with opinions. I mean, I would get a lot of mail in the old days and phone calls to my desk that I would always answer or get back to them. And this would include people calling just about procedural questions about things, not necessarily my opinion on whether or not Bernie Kosar back in 85 should be starting for the Browns. And so, you know, nowadays you're bombarded from so many different ways, from Facebook and from Twitter, and it's the nature of the beast. It's almost 24/7 in some ways, but it's still an exciting medium. And if you treat it right, I think you can exert change out there, whether it's social change or whether it's just, you know, better conditions for people. You can tell stories. It all gets back, guys, to just telling a story. I mean, that's what we're in the business to do. We tell stories, either by chatting up somebody on a podcast. We tell stories long form in TV. We can write long form stories as well. But if you are a good storyteller and you're well informed, I think you can do pretty good.
John, last time was March when I really had a conversation on this particular topic. You're a sports guy, so this is going to be a little off base. I'm going to ask you a sports question. I hope you're still up on things. So my
whatever you say, Mr. Hershiser.
Hold on. Yeah, right.
Go right ahead.
You know, he was doing Dodgers games for a while, or I was on ESPN, and I figured I should send him a note and say, you're following me now. But anyhow, speaking of baseball, we have a 60-game baseball season coming up, which is going to be quite different. When you look at the Indians, is there a hole that they are need to address, or what do you, as far as baseball goes on the field, can they be competitive? Can they win the, you know, in a short season, it would seem like everybody kind of has a chance. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, everybody really does. And we were on a Zoom call yesterday with Terry Francona about that. And he said, you know, you can choose to look at this two different ways. You can say, hey, it's August 1st, basically, and we're all tied for first, and there's 60 games to go in the season. Or you can look at it and say, hey, here we are playing a game amidst the pandemic. There's nobody in the stands. There's fake noise. There's these jacked up rules that we're going to be playing with a runner on second in extra innings, or the universal DH, or we can't spit, we can't sit near each other, can't chew gum. He said you can look at it that way too, but he believes his guys have the makeup, and he knows his team as well as any manager in baseball knows their team. And I think he's the perfect guy for this situation. So you ask what holes. Right now, you have to worry a little bit about the outfield, but by and large, given that they have Bieber and Cookie and Clevinger, and some guys have healed up, even Naquin's back, I think they have a real good opportunity, and it all gets down to how they play in those first 15 games, let's say, because 15 games would be like about, you know, 40 games, you know, a regular season. So I think they have a real good shot because of Tito. I just think he's really embraced this bizarre world that they're going to be playing in. And I feel confident in how he will lead the team. And, you know, it's just going to be fun to see real baseball. I hope they can get through the month of July and not have any big incidents. But there's going to be people around the league, and there may be a guy on the Indians that will test positive despite all the procedures that they're going through. But I just have a good feeling about this team this year, and it even, you know, went back to before we even heard of this COVID-19. I just felt pretty good about them.
When they win it all, we'll have you back on, and we'll play this back, and we'll say, John Telich told us so.
And nobody was there. Nobody was there in the stands to see.
That's right. Nobody saw
it.
That's Cleveland right there, right? We were going to win it the year nobody could see it. Hey, John, thanks for your time. You mentioned social media. Can you tell folks where they can follow you? And I know you have a podcast, so tell us where we can find that podcast.
Thank you for giving me the chance to do that, Teddy. I'm on Twitter at JohnTelich8, the number 8, so JohnTelich8. And then Instagram, it's lowercase, but it's just John Telich. And Facebook is Facebook, you know that. LinkedIn, you can find me under John Telich. And my podcast is called Telich Talks. It's on pretty much all the podcast platforms, starting with the Apple, that purple button on your phone, but it originated with the medium anchor.fm. And so that's the app that I use. But bottom line is, right now during the pandemic, it's kind of sat there, but I've got some plans to get some episodes back up and running and get it back to the way it was. It was pretty much once a week for a full year. And I really enjoyed the breadth of interviews that I did. I had a lot of interviews, 60 some episodes in there right now. You can peruse and check out. So thanks for the opportunity to plug it. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. If you follow John on Facebook, you'll learn about the bride and you'll learn about triathlons. I think those are the, we didn't even touch on that, but 100 triathlons you've competed in, which is in and itself pretty amazing. Well, hey, Country JT, thank you so much for your time.
And, you bet, Teddy. Thanks, guys. You guys are great, man. And again, God bless Larry Hiner. Hell of a man. Hell of a guy.
Absolutely well said. Thank you, John. Appreciate it.
Time now for, it used to be called the news. I was thinking we needed a snappier name for this segment. Racking my brain, and Ken said it's right in front of you. Bring back Klopp's Clips. Give you a little background on this. There you go.
Woo!
I used to work in Mansfield on the TV station there.
The communication center.
I used to. That's how they answer the phone. Thank you for calling the Communication Center.
Communication Center.
Anyhow, I did a segment on Sunday nights where I, you know, showed the silly sports plays of the week. And I called it Klopp's Clips. So we're doing news now, but we're doing ridiculous news stories, so why not? So here we are. These are Klopp's Clips. First up, been a lot of talk about statues and their removal recently. Cleveland's Little Italy neighborhood, no exception. In 1988, a statue of Christopher Columbus was erected in the area. Now a change.org petition is calling for the replacement of that statue with one of Chef Boyardee.
Oh, yeah. The old chef.
Now, hold on. There's actually a Cleveland connection to this. The chef immigrated to the U.S. in 1914, eventually moving to the Cleveland area, where he opened a restaurant, and his sauce was so popular that people asked him to bottle it. That is where the canned product we know today started. Chef Boyardee, by the way, passed away in 1985 while living in Parma.
Parma.
Of he all the connections.
Parma.
Parma.
Oh, my gosh. Parma. I had no idea.
Yep.
That's crazy.
Brooklyn, wow. Ohio, suburban Cleveland, a Memphis Avenue man called police saying someone tried to steal his car for the second time in a week using a tow truck. Now, a little thought from me here, editorial. If somebody tries to take your car twice in a week, you might want to make sure you've made the payments.
Could be a repo.
During one of the failed attempts, the thief wound up ripping the bumper off the man's car.
Oh.
Police are investigating.
I imagine they are.
Police and firefighters called to a post office in Germany because of a terrible package, a package with a terrible smell. The odor led workers to believe the package contained a dangerous substance. 60 workers evacuated, 6 hospitalized, 12 treated for nausea. Turns out that the shipment was durian fruit. It is a spiky looking green fruit with a smell described as sewage, rotten meat, or dead rats. The fruit believed to be great for improving muscle strength and blood pressure. Editorial, not good for nausea.
The only thing I'll say is that it sounds like that's something you have to eat, but you have to plug your nose in order to eat it. That doesn't sound like something you'd want to have.
It sounds to me like if you eat it, something else might get unplugged. But anyhow, we'll just keep on going. An 80-pound iguana found in the freezer of a pizza place in West Palm Beach, Florida. Apparently, the dead reptile was a gift to the owner and was stored in a separate freezer away from the food. Inspectors shut Pizza Mambo down for a day because of the violation. The iguana thrown away after the owner was informed that having an iguana in a freezer at your restaurant is, in fact, a violation.
Leave the iguana alone. Leave it, let it be.
Let it be. Visitors to the Grand Canyon being encouraged to take extra precautions because of extreme heat. Temperatures there are in excess of 110 degrees, and the National Park Service is warning visitors to be extra cautious about melting shoes.
Oh, my.
A tweet from the Park Service notes that the heat inside the canyon can cause shoes to melt and fall apart.
If it's 110 degrees...
What are you doing outside?
I'm not going there. I'm going to ride in the car like they do at the zoo now, where you just drive around the zoo and not walk around.
God gave us air conditioning for a reason.
My gosh, 110. It's so hot you melt your shoes? Not worth it.
Nope. No.
Not doing it.
Yep. A Louisiana man arrested after he jumped into an aquarium at a Bass Pro Shop and started swimming. 26-year-old Kevin Wise said he took the plunge to fulfill a promise he made to his TikTok followers. TikTok is a new social media. He apparently told them he'd jump into the tank if he got more than 2,000 likes. Said he didn't want to be a liar. Bass Pro Shop's now suing him for money it cost them to empty out the 13,000-gallon tank and clean it following his swim.
Good. They should.
Yeah.
That's lunacy. What are you doing? Yeah. Why are you doing that? So you broke your promise. No big deal. Nobody's asked you to swim around in that. Come on.
I bet there wasn't a shark in there, you know?
Ridiculous.
An opera house in Barcelona celebrated the end of Spain's national state of emergency with a concert to a packed house. More than 2,200 plants. I'll say that again. More than 2,200 plants filled the audience for the 8-minute performance by a string quartet. The event was also live streamed for humans and did include the obligatory request in 3 languages for the audience members to silence their cell phones and refrain from photos. The plants were actually donated by local nurseries, and after the performance, they were given to healthcare workers at the Hospital Clinic of Barcelona to honor their work during the pandemic.
I was first going to make comment about this, but now that I know it's a fundraiser, I will say nothing. I think that's nice.
That is nice. Kind of a unique way to get there, but in the end, a good idea.
That's great.
Talk of another stimulus check continues here in the U.S., even as a government watchdog agency announced an interesting finding last week. The Government Accountability Office says more than 1 million dead people received money in the first round of stimulus checks.
What?
The agency says a legal interpretation left the Treasury Department and the IRS unable to use government death records to stop the checks from going to people who are deceased. The result, more than $1.4 billion being distributed to dead people.
I don't understand that. So you throw a combination of, I think, of all these people that have had businesses, okay, and they were trying to get stimulus money, couldn't get it. Then I think about, I think the number is like 45 million people right now that are unemployed would love to have additional dollars, and we cannot figure it out. I don't care if you're Republican, Democrat, it doesn't make any difference to me. Can we figure out how we're not sending money to people that are no longer on this earth? I don't understand.
Incompetence.
That's insane.
Incompetence. A 10-year-old boy from England set the Guinness World Record for solving multiplication and division problems in 1 minute. Nadub Gill used his time during the lockdown to practice his math skills on the Times Table Rockstars app. He answered 196 multiplication and division questions in 1 minute. 196 multiplication and division questions in 1 minute. That is 3 answers per second. 3 answers per second.
That's like faster than an auctioneer. 3, 5, 5. I mean, that's insane.
Yeah.
I need video. I need to see this with my own eyes. I'm going to fire this up and watch this.
Fair enough.
But I think it's true. If it's Guinness Book of World Records, don't fool around.
If it's in Guinness, it must be true.
It's legit.
Sure. In China, a man passed out after downing a reported 10 bottles of beer.
My.
He apparently didn't answer nature's call, not even once. The 40-year-old, identified only as Mr. Fu, had severe abdominal pains the next day, so he went to the hospital where a CT scan revealed his bladder was torn in 3 places. The pee-induced pain so intense that Hu was unable to lie flat and couldn't relieve himself despite numerous attempts. Worse than all that, one of the holes had ruptured toward Hu's abdominal cavity and forced part of his intestines to spill into the bladder. That could be fatal. Good news here, though. Doctors performed emergency surgery. Hu now out of the hospital. By the way, the medical term for this situation apparently is traumatic bladder rupture.
What was his name?
Hu.
The guy in the story.
Hu.
The guy in the story. The guy that chugged down 10 beers and then blew out his bladder.
Hu is his name.
Who is next story?
Well, that's all I got, Ken. I think that has covered this week's collection of Klopp's Clips.
This week in Cleveland history.
Ted, it's that time once again for This Week in Cleveland History. Are you ready for your history lesson in Cleveland?
Ready as I'm going to be.
It sounds like it. All right, July 1st. 1931. Once again, we're going to talk about Cleveland Municipal Stadium. We talked about it last week. Talking about it again.
Yeah.
It was completed in 1931 on July 1st. 3 days later, on July 4th, 1931, they had the first fireworks display at that stadium.
So within 1 year, they built an 80,000-seat stadium in 1930 and 31.
Yes.
Nowadays, it takes twice that. Now, the stadiums are obviously a lot more involved, but that's pretty amazing, 1 year to build something that big.
That's unbelievable. I know the Raiders stadium that I had a chance to see in January, that's still not done. They've been building that for 2 years. Hmm. And that's, wow. I mean, that's much bigger than this. Okay. That's unbelievable. Knowing that that lasted till, well, the Indians stopped playing there in 93.
Yeah, and the Browns last season was 95.
Wow, right? That's insane.
94.
And then it was still around after that for a couple of years, was it not?
Yeah, they knocked it down in 97.
I think they knocked it down when they built the new Browns Stadium.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the Browns came back in 99, so.
Yeah.
697, wow. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Have you seen a team photo for the Browns from 1996?
I have not.
The blank sheet of paper.
Just turn the knife some more. There we go. Okay, we're now going to move to 1968, July 3rd. The coldest temperature ever in Cleveland was recorded. What do you think that temperature was, Ted?
Pretty darn cold. July? 50.
Let's try 41.
Oh.
That same day, okay? Huh? I want you to think about this now. Louis Tiant strikes out baseball record 19 Minnesota Twins in a 1-0 10-inning win. Tiant wound up striking out 32 in consecutive games.
Wow.
So he grabbed the ball in 41-degree temperatures and struck out 19 batters. That's impressive.
That's obviously because the mound was like 10 feet tall, wasn't it?
Oh, that's exactly what it had to be. No, okay. Nothing to do with his abilities at all.
Right.
Of course.
Right. Yeah, sure.
That's impressive. Yeah. Okay. Now we move to 1959, July 5th. Singer Mark Cohn was born in Cleveland. He was walking in Memphis. But 34 years later, on July 5th, 1993.
What happened to Mark Cohn? He was born on July 5th.
Yeah, 1959.
Okay. Okay, all right, I got you. All right.
And he walked in Memphis.
Okay.
And sang that song.
Okay.
Right, and then 34 years later, I bet you was thinking about this.
Yeah.
That Oakland outfielder Ricky Henderson would lead off both games of a doubleheader in Cleveland with home runs. It's the first time that happened since 1913. What do you remember about Ricky Henderson?
His humility.
No doubt. He'd tell you that, too.
He sure would.
He changed. I will give him this with baseball, and you can talk to historians and people around the game. He changed the game a lot, being a powerful leadoff hitter.
Yeah, up until that point, the leadoff hitter was not a power guy.
Nope. And he was a base stealer, obviously. He set some records, stolen base records and things like that.
Just a couple. So, didn't he proclaim himself the greatest of all time when he stole the record-breaking base?
I think he did, but I think he actually has the most stolen bases of anybody ever in baseball.
I'd argue that he's not at least the greatest base stealer in the history of the game.
But he played until he was like 50. He was playing like independent baseball. He's trying to be like Julio Franco.
I was just thinking Julio Franco and him probably on the same team.
And Manny Ramirez is still trying to play. He's like 48.
Yeah, well.
Independent ball.
God bless him.
And then finally, Ted, July 8th, 1923, American sprinter Harrison Dillard was born in Cleveland. He ran in the 1948 and 1952 Olympics, winning 4 gold medals.
Wow.
Now, I have more information about
Harrison
Dillard.
Okay.
So there's a gentleman who used to be the head track coach at John Adams and Cleveland Heights, very famous track coach. Claude Holland. He actually spent a lot of time with Harrison Dillard. And when Harrison died in 2019, he spent some time with him before he passed. Harrison died at the age of 96.
Holy cow.
He's the only Olympian, by the way, to win the 100-meter dash and the 110-meter hurdles in the Olympics. He's the only one ever to do that.
Now, you used to run track. Those are different abilities. Am I correct?
Yes, they are. Okay. Yes, completely different with hurdles and that. And I must tell you, I ran track, but I will not even put myself in any type of category with anybody that was pretty good, because I had a fine career, but I was a good alternate. We'll leave it at that. So back to Harrison Dillard. Okay. So this guy, amazing track runner. They call him the Cleveland Track King. Now, mind you, there was another gentleman that came out of Cleveland by the name of, I don't know, Jesse Owens, who's pretty famous.
Yeah.
Many people feel as though he was, you know, a great athlete and was up to that level and all that. Not only Harrison Dillard was a great athlete, he also was in World War II, was a Buffalo soldier. I mean, you want to talk about a man who speaks America and is what the country's all about, works his tail off, fights in World War II, he's a Buffalo soldier, and then sets these records and is from Cleveland, Ohio. Very impressive.
So he served in World War II and then competed and won 4 Olympic gold medals in 2 different Olympics after serving in World War II.
That is correct.
Yes.
Wow. I have a hard time just driving home sometimes. I have a hard time just, you know, getting up in the morning. This guy's fighting in World War II, fighting for our country, and then wins 4 Olympic medals.
I have a hard time getting my kids to put their shoes on. Wow.
Ted, that is some Cleveland history for you.
All right, Ken, it's that time. Another episode in the books. And we've got July 4th coming up. Do you have any special plans?
The only special plans I have, we'll celebrate my brother's birthday on the 5th. And it's also a special day for my daughter, who's getting her first communion. How about you?
Oh, excellent. That's outstanding. We will probably have a cookout some kind.
Very nice.
Yeah. We'll sit on opposite sides of the table and holler at each other, so we have social distance, and it'll be a good time. So,
following the rules.
You got it. Follow the rules. That will do it for this week's episode of Two Middle-Aged Men in Cleveland. Ken, what do we need to remember?
We're just two middle-aged men in Cleveland, Ted.